Thank you guys for sticking around for the last talk of this session. I'll try and be quick so we can all get back to Bourbon Street. So I'm here to talk to you about growing food with garbage. I'm from the University of Rhode Island, and this is work I did as part of my master's thesis. So using waste to grow crops is not a new idea. Long before the invention of synthetic nitrogen fixation and the widespread use of mineral fertilizers, we were using waste, but recently people have started to look at more diverse sources of waste, including some industrial processes. And there are a lot of good reasons to use waste. For the farmer, this is a source of nutrients for their crops, but also carbon, the main component of organic matter to potentially build soil organic matter. And also these can be cheap and locally available. But for the rest of us, this is also a way to recycle nutrients, prevent these wastes from going into landfills, and finally, maybe sequester carbon in the soil and prevent it from going into the atmosphere as a greenhouse gas. So if there are so many good reasons to be using waste, you figure we probably are using all of them. But of the over 80 million tons of just these four wastes produced in 1 year in the U.S., over 50 million tons are not being recycled for beneficial use. So this is still a resource we're not taking full advantage of. There are a few reasons these probably aren't getting used. Some of them are just unstudied. While things like biosolids and paper sludge has been pretty extensively researched, some of the stranger, more novel, industrial things nobody's looked at yet. There's also concern about undesirable properties. These things are not produced explicitly for agriculture, so people worry about excessive salinity or heavy metals. And finally, it's hard to predict how much nitrogen you're going to get. With a mineral fertilizer, you know I'm putting down this much nitrogen and it's going to be plant available. But in a waste, your nitrogen's in organic forms, so it has to go through microbial processes before it can become plant available. And we don't necessarily know how much of that's going to be there the first year. So for farmers, that's really an issue. So with all that in mind, I set out to look at six wastes and compare them to a conventional mineral fertilizer. I looked at a paper fiber, which had to be blended with chicken manure because it's so low in nutrients and high in carbon. A gelatin waste, this is from a factory that produces gelatin for pharmaceuticals, film, medicinal capsules. A dehydrated restaurant food waste, composted yard waste, and a composted yard waste biosolids co-compost, and biosolids is, of course, processed sewage sludge. And finally, a multi-source compost. This is a local organic product that had a lot of stuff in it. It had exotic manure from a zoo, it had seashells, it had seaweed, all kinds of stuff. And I compared this again to a mineral fertilizer. I looked at both the effects on soil quality, but also three crops, sweet corn, butternut squash, and potatoes. You can see the varieties. And we did the study at the University of Rhode Island's Crop Research Farm in 2013 and 14. It was laid out in a randomized block design with four replicates. And we applied the waste to put down 10,000 kilograms of carbon over the 2 years. And because the nutrient density and the ratios of the nutrients in these varied, that means we were putting down different nutrient rates. But for the most part, they were all above the recommended rates for those three crops. So the first major result in terms of soil quality was that these were not harmful. We looked at electrical conductivity, a measure of salinity, and it did not reach levels that would affect even sensitive plants. Also, there were no significant effects on soil heavy metals. We looked at it in the soil. There was no significant difference between the control and the waste. We also looked at the corn ears themselves, because this is how the heavy metals are going to get into the food chain. And again, no significant differences. But this was only 2 years of application, and because heavy metals build up in the soil, just because they're safe in the short term doesn't mean there couldn't be a long-term problem. So an undergrad I worked with actually did a pretty simple model where he looked at applying the amendments and then incorporated atmospheric deposition and things like uptake and removal. And he found that it would take upwards of at least 25 years of applying these before you would have to consider stopping using them because of the levels in the soil. For some, it was even up to 50 years. So even in the long term, these are pretty safe. And also we saw some unique benefits from them. After only 1 year of application, the bulk density was significantly lower in food waste plots compared to the control. And also in the multi-source plots, pH was significantly higher over the whole duration of the study compared to the control. And I think this was because that contained a large amount of seashells, which are calcium carbonate, and you add that to the soil and it neutralizes acidity. So that's a benefit if you live in a place where you regularly have to lime your soil. Or it could be a problem if you're growing potatoes and you want low pH. We also looked at soil organic matter. Because the control plots receive no carbon and the waste plots receive 10,000 kilograms, I expected to see a significant difference. However, it took 2 years before I saw any difference. And you'll notice that these graphs are actually the change in organic matter, and that's why there's a negative value. So there was no significant difference for the first year of the study, and the second year I didn't see any significant difference until the final sampling. And then the only ones that had a significant effect were the yard waste and the biosolids, significantly higher than the control. And I think the reason these two had an effect, whereas the others didn't, was these were both composted, so had the most stable carbon, and then had the most effect. The multi-source was also composted, but I mentioned this had a lot of seashells. It was actually 50% of its carbon was from the seashells, and this is not microbially available, so this was not contributing to that. And as I pointed out, there's actually a negative value on the food waste plot, which is interesting. This could be an example of a priming effect where you add a lot of really readily available carbon, and it so stimulates microbial growth that you actually end up burning through some of your existing soil organic matter, and you actually end up with less than you started with. And finally, to yield, the corn, we grew two varieties. We grew Applause in 2013 and 14. Brocade switched to Montauk in the second year. And this is the weight we harvested per plant. 2013, we saw no significant differences between treatments. 2014, however, multi-source compost, paper fiber, and yard waste produced significantly less than the control and Applause, and the multi-source also produced significantly less in the Montauk plots. For Barnett squash, again, 2013, no significant differences. And again, in 2014, multi-source, paper fiber, and yard waste underperformed. And this is the weight of squash we harvested per plot. Finally, for potatoes, we again saw no significant differences in 2013. However, in 2014, actually, they all produced yields that were equivalent or not significantly different from the control. So just to recap that, the gelatin waste, the biosolids, and the dehydrated food waste produced equivalent or higher yields for both years for all the crops, whereas the paper fiber, the yard waste, and the multi-source underperformed for corn and squash, but not potato. The question is, why did these three not perform as well? I don't think it was necessarily because of the MPK application rate. They all received more than the control, with the exception of the paper fiber received less phosphorus, but it was still above the recommended rates for the crop. We also did tissue sampling and looked at the nutrient levels there to see if there was a micronutrient deficiency. And while we did see some deficiencies, none of them really matched up well to which treatments did worse, so not really sure why. The final thing I want to talk about was an interesting thing we saw with our quality of our potatoes. When they were harvested, I separated them into firsts, seconds, and culls based on how much disease and insect damage. Firsts were the best and culls were the worst. And here you're seeing them as a percent of the total harvest. And the first thing you'll notice is that 2014 was a lot worse. We just had better conditions for disease and insects. We had a lot more wireworm damage. But what's interesting is the paper fiber didn't have nearly as much of a decline in quality. And it had significantly more of the firsts and significantly less of the seconds than the control. And what's cool about this is since it was able to produce an equivalent yield to the control, that and then the quality of that harvest was actually better. In a bad disease year, you're going to have a higher value crop from your paper fiber plots than if you'd use just a conventional thing. And this is in agreement with some other studies that have seen inhibitory effects from paper fiber. So in conclusion, these six wastes that I looked at were safe. We didn't see any harmful effects on soil quality. We also saw some benefits. Biosolids and yard waste may be able to increase soil organic matter, but may take a couple years of application. Food waste can decrease bulk density. And multi-source compost, or a compost that has seashells, can increase pH. And finally, they were all able to achieve comparable yields for at least one of the crops. The gelatin waste, biosolids, and dehydrated food waste achieved it for all three crops, whereas the paper fiber, yard waste, and multi-source only the potatoes. But the paper fiber produced significantly better quality potatoes in a bad disease year. And the takeaway, I think, is that these all have potential to effectively replace mineral fertilizers, and it's also a safe way to get rid of them and save them from going into landfills. I want to acknowledge that I got my funding from the Rhode Island Agricultural Experiment Station and Enhancement of Graduate Research Grant. I got a lot of help from the agronomy farm crew and fellow grad students. And also, I didn't get to talk a lot. I looked a lot at the different properties of these amendments, and I didn't get to talk about that here, but I have a poster downstairs number 407, and I'll be there on Friday if you have any questions about that. Thank you. Food safety in terms of, so we didn't have any issues with these, but I can see, you can't use the biosolids for certified organic, obviously, and the restaurant waste, since it is, I'm not sure if it's stuff that came off of people's plates, but I can see how with food safety, you could have issues with that. That product is not composted, it's aerobically incubated for 18 hours to reduce bulk. And heated, so I don't know if that would take care of some of those issues, but I could see there being food safety concerns with that one.
So, and were you, your 2-year study,
yep.
You were putting those amendments back up to the same site?
Yep, it was 2-year application and it was cumulative.
Okay.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's interesting you saw no differences at all in 2013 and then 2014, all of a sudden you start seeing all kinds of
systems. Yeah. I believe.
So.
Yeah, I believe Dr. Brown can answer some of that. They are continuing some of the study.
She graduated already.
Oh, okay.